The first time that I visited Malaysia was in 1992. And I was sent by my teachers, who were the abbots and ex-abbots of our monastery, Ganden Shartse. And I never knew that coming here would lead to actually staying and contributing to the growth of Buddha's teachings in this country. And that's what it turned out to be. At first, many of the Tibetan lamas and monks and tubuls and rinpoches and geshes travel abroad to raise funds in order to bring it back to India or Nepal or sometimes Tibet to rebuild their monastic institutions, to take care of the monks and the nuns, to supply their needs during their studies so that Buddhism can be continued by way of having knowledgeable monks and nuns who can teach. And that trend is still going on, but I would like to be a new trendsetter. I would like to be someone who actually develops Dharma outside of the Tibetan communities. So I feel the Tibetan communities in India and Nepal are doing quite well, and they're all right. The need to raise funds is always there, but basically they're all right for the time being. So therefore, I have been raising funds all over Asia for Ganden Monastery for many, many years. And so therefore now, I would like to try something new. And that would be to establish the Dharma for Buddhists here in Malaysia very strongly, and to build institutions, to create a place where we can have our own local teachers, that we can do Buddhist charities or charities under the flagship and also under the mediumship of Buddhism. So one of my aims is not to now raise a lot of funds to take to another country or to another place, but to raise funds to build and establish something very strong here in our country of Malaysia, which will benefit the people here, of course, and the people in the surrounding regions. So what's very important now is to build something here so that the Buddha Dharma will have a physical, strong, stable, tangible structure for Buddhism to grow. That will be my project now, to make Buddhism grow here as opposed to raising funds for another country.
Or Buddhism to grow
in another place, more here. So I have made Malaysia my home. I am very proud to be in Malaysia. I'm very honored to be in Malaysia. And I'm very happy to be here to be able to do this work. Teaching isn't one of my fortes, or teaching isn't something that I dreamed of doing. It's something that I kind of grew into due to the instructions of my teacher. So my main function in Malaysia would be to teach the Dharma and to spread the Dharma by knowledge and by teaching. So I'm here, I'm happy to be here, and I'm proud to be here, and I'm very honored to be in Malaysia, to have so many Malaysian friends. And my life's aim is to bring Buddhism to those who are ready, those who are ripe, and those who are appropriate vehicles to bring the holy teachings of Buddha to their lives and to their minds and to their activities. Asking for donations, asking for material assistance, requesting for material help for Buddhism Sangha, Buddhism's workers, and the growth of Buddhism is nothing new or nothing indigenous of the Tibetan tradition. In fact, this is a tradition that was started by Lord Buddha himself. And that is represented by Lord Buddha having a begging bowl. A begging bowl is distinguished by its name, a begging bowl. The bowl is supposed to contain nourishment for the body in order to continue the spiritual practices that bring us to enlightenment. Begging is used for countering one's pride and ego to beg or to ask, to lower oneself to the other person for help. So some of us have very big problems to ask people for help or to voice that we need help because it somehow gives the connotation that we have failed. But in Buddhism, when we beg, it is not a connotation of failure, but it's a connotation of victory. What type of victory? A spiritual and emotional victory. Why is that? It's because we've given up all types of ambitions, all types of wishes, and all types of methods to immerse ourselves in strictly the making of a career or the making of money to support ourselves. But we have basically surrendered that in order that we can use our time 100% into spiritual pursuits or spiritual exercises. So therefore, in order to support that spiritual exercise, the Buddha has taught us to beg. So therefore, if we beg, it means that we are pursuing spiritual exercises. Spiritual exercises, namely, overcoming one's incredible mind that has wrong conceptions, misconceptions, such as jealousy and anger and hatred and being sneaky or not being forthright. So those are qualities that we do not wish to have, because those qualities bring unhappiness, whereas the opposite of those qualities bring happiness. So therefore, when we engage in spiritual pursuits, it is to engage in spiritual thinking, contemplation, and study that overcomes those qualities. So in order to overcome those incredible, deeply ingrained qualities that bring harm and unhappiness, we need to put 100% effort toward our spiritual exercises and pursuits. Therefore, that would exclude the time for us to create a livelihood. So therefore, begging for one's livelihood benefits the person who gives, and it benefits the person who begs. It benefits the person who gives because they create a karmic imprint that in the future they may be able to gain spiritual qualities or accomplishments by supporting spiritual aspirants. For the spiritual aspirant who begs, it counters the ego and the pride and the face factor that they wish to have in society that they are successful. And many people suffer from that, to not be able to beg or to open their mouth or ask for help. So asking or begging for help becomes a spiritual exercise. And therefore, begging has a dual meaning in Buddhism, as expressed by our Lord Buddha, who shaved his head, wore very simple homespun robes, and basically had a begging bowl, and his nourishment was whatever came out of that begging bowl. So begging is not something created or developed by the Buddhists later, but it was instituted by Lord Buddha himself. So therefore, there is no shame in begging. There is honor, and there is grace, and there is dignity, because the aspiration behind begging and opening our mouth and asking for help is motivated by the fact that we wish to attain the highest enlightenment for others in order to benefit them. Therefore, we wish not to waste any time on material gains or material aspirations. When we develop a very strong aspiration to benefit others, and this aspiration is very, very stable and confirmed, we manifest that, or we actualize that motivation by effortlessly, spontaneously, and happily taking on spiritual vows. Those vows come in different categories. The basic preliminary vow is the refuge vow. Then we have the Bodhisattva vows. Then we have the Vajrayana vows. And then, on top of that, people may also choose to take the Vinaya vows. So therefore, these type of aspirations are very strong, and they're manifested in holding our vows. How strong our aspirations toward benefiting others are is manifested in how effortlessly we hold our vows. So if our vows are effortlessly held, and we have no problems holding our vows, keeping promises, keeping our samayas clean, it means that our aspiration to benefit others is real, is spontaneous, and very deep-seated. Those who find it difficult to hold on to vows, or find it difficult to be able to keep their vows clean and well, it shows a very clear indication that their aspiration to benefit others is not stabilized. So therefore, for those whose aspirations to benefit others are stabilized, it can manifest in holding your vows, and from that, they may do intense study. From that, they may do intense meditation. From that, they may receive the four classes of tantric initiations, a deity from any of the four classes of tantric initiations, and they may engage in retreats. Those type of beings who engage in retreats or do intense study or do intense meditation, they are manifesting the power of their vows because they get closer and closer and closer to achieving spiritual enlightenment for the benefit of others. This wish to achieve spiritual benefit for the benefit of others is bodhicitta. It can be artificial bodhicitta or it can be definite confirmed bodhicitta. Whatever it is, artificial bodhicitta is generated in the beginning where it becomes or grows or manifests into real bodhicitta. So whether it's artificial bodhicitta or it's actualized bodhicitta, the wish to benefit others. When we do prayers, we will use mandala sets, or we'll have statues that we make offerings to, or we may have very holy rosaries, or we may have pendants, or we may have tzatzas, or we may have prayer books, or we may have vajras and bells or other ritual items or tankas that may be used to help the yogi, help the meditator, or help the practitioner to aid them in developing their spiritual attainments. So a person who has held their vows very well and their spiritual aspirations are very strong and they continue to do their prayers, they do their meditations, it is said to affect the very objects around them. It will affect their clothes, it will affect the table, it will affect their rosary, it will affect their rings, it will affect even their watches, it will affect the tankas, the statues, it will affect their dharma books. So in fact, everything they touch or use, it infuses those items with the energy of wishing to achieve benefit for others. So when other beings touch these items, wear these items, or make offerings to these items, or enshrine these items in stupas, or make prostrations, or make personal aspirations in front of these objects, it is very, very powerful to open up their own imprints from their previous lives for them to continue their spiritual practice. So clothes, robes, personal objects, hair, rosaries, tankas, statues, tzatzas, pendants, books, scriptures, etc., etc., that are used by beings who have held on to their vows, who have aspired to benefit others, and who do prayers to benefit others, are said to be very powerful in awakening the spirituality of others. At the same time, it provides a very powerful protection from negative spirits, negative interferences, negative energy. And in fact, having such a holy object in a house, or in our car, or on our person, or in our purse, or around our neck, is said to protect us at all times. Protect us by the power of the aspiration to benefit others. So in Tibetan tradition, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, these objects are considered very holy and very valued, and everyone wishes to obtain those objects. Why? Because those objects remind us, connect us, and bring us closer to the goal of enlightenment. And I'd like to wish all of you a very happy New Year's, a prosperous New Year's, and also a New Year's filled with the blessing of Lama Tsongkhapa in your lives.